Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to The Political Party. Today's guest is Vladimir Ashakov, Executive Director of the Anti-Corruption Foundation that he set up with Alexei Navalny, who of course is still imprisoned in Russia. This is a phenomenal, vital conversation about the reality of Putin's Russia, what's happening in Ukraine, Britain's involvement in various regards, and just Vladimir's brave, persistent campaigning for freedom and against Vladimir Putin. Before we come on to the interview, thank you so much to all of you that have come to my gigs recently, the Nottingham night. I've never experienced a gig like that in my life. So thank you to all of you who came. That was a very, very special atmosphere. And I'm still on tour. Clans to the Left of Me, Jokes to the Right goes to York and Leeds are both sold out. And then it goes to Canterbury, Exeter, and a few more. And a London run at the Soho Theatre. Some of those shows have sold out, but go to mattford.com for those tickets and tickets to the Political Party Live, where my next guest is Lisa Nandy, at a time when the Labour leadership is under the microscope in the news consistently. It'd be great to hear from Lisa Nandy, the Shadow Secretary of State for Levelling Up, of course, former Shadow Foreign Secretary and someone who stood for the Labour leadership last time, someone tipped to stand for the Labour leadership next time. Who knows when that may be? Durham Police now hold that timetable in their hands, perhaps. So that may have taken on a more urgent nature by Monday. My guest 2 weeks after that is Wes Streeting. Then it's Gary Neville. Then it's David Davis. Then it's Lindsay Hoyle. So it's a mega run of guests. You can get tickets for all of those shows at mattford.com and tickets for the tour as well. On then to Vladimir Ashakov, who's an incredible individual, someone who has incurred, I guess, hardship in a way that his life has been fundamentally changed by his decision to speak up about Vladimir Putin and the reality of that regime. But there are moments of real hope in here, particularly about what change may come in the next 5 or so years. Vladimir, it must always be a difficult experience being such a public opponent of Vladimir Putin. But thinking particularly of the last, say, 6 months, how bad has this been for you?
Well, I've been living in London since 2014. It wasn't by choice. It was a result of politically motivated persecution in Russia because I was a close associate of Alexei Navalny, who over years emerged as the most prominent opponent of Vladimir Putin. So I have been doing my civil and political work from London for the last 8 years. In terms of safety and security, obviously we know that Britain has been the place where Russian security services have assassinated a number of people. The most sort of famous would be Litvinenko and Skripals, but there are unconfirmed evidences of other unexplained deaths. So you can't live your life normally when you're constantly thinking about that. So you just take reasonable precautions and carry on.
And obviously your friend Navalny was poisoned, not in Britain, but on that flight, a poisoning that, you know, many thought was going to cost him his life. I mean, why do you think you haven't been poisoned, or you've just been good at evading it?
Navalny also always was saying in his interviews, the question that people always ask is, if you have been opposing the regime of Putin, you have been uncovering corruption and human rights abuse, why would Russian authorities not get rid of you in one case or the other? So he was poisoned a year and a half ago, and then he was incarcerated in Russia. So maybe my time has not come yet. But on a less sinister note, I think it's much harder for Russian security services to do things like that in London, and especially after the start of the war. There is the customary meetings that people under threat, like myself, have with the Metropolitan Police, and we are in communications. So I can't give you a better answer than that.
And how do you feel about London then? Obviously, for many years, referred to as Londongrad, it was seen as a place where Russian oligarchs would launder their dirty money, get the children into elite private schools, buy up property, that effectively the British authorities look the other way. Now, I know that some things have changed, and Bill Browd has been a very effective lobbyist on things like the Magnitsky Act and things. But do you think Britain is still a place where cronies, friends of Vladimir Putin, crooks, can come launder their money and ingratiate themselves into the upper echelons of our society?
Well, first of all, London is a great city. It's a natural magnet for talented and ambitious people from all over the world. For Russians who decide to live outside of Russia, it's a natural choice. English is the first language that everybody learned at school. It's a big city, not dissimilar to Moscow. Public services generally work. People trust the British education system. People trust the British financial and legal system. What's not to like? So London is home to, I think, about 150,000 Russians of different sorts. Most of them are professionals, lawyers, bankers, people who work in culture, students, etc. So you cannot just label all Russians who live in Russia as crooks and thieves. But of course, London is a huge financial center, and tens of billions of financial flows go through London, and part of that is dirty money stemming from corruption. Now, there are many countries where corruption is rampant, but Russia is probably unique in that it tries to use its influence in a malign way, so that it undermines the Western political order. And Russia increasingly over the last years have been taking a confrontational stance towards the West. We have seen the assassinations that we talked about. We have seen the cyber warfare and meddling in elections in various countries. We have seen sort of proxy conflicts in Middle East. And now we have seen this unprecedented aggression in Ukraine, which has caused insufferable tragedy for the Ukrainian people, but also in Europe, the flood of refugees, the additional expenses on securities, armaments, the increased energy prices. That's the cost of Russia being and slipping towards totalitarianism that has been happening.
It's also had another influence here. I mean, limited influence, admittedly, but through channels like Sputnik and Russia Today, which Russia Today recruited people like the former First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond. You know, it's had formerly credible people on there as well as the usual suspects. I mean, are you surprised that formerly credible British politicians were prepared to go on to that channel basically in return for a few quid?
Indeed. Russia Today is a media outlet, state-owned, that has been a tool of Russian propaganda for a number of years. It has been very well funded, and it has recruited a number of opinion leaders from different countries, including British politicians and public figures. You would think that after the start of the war in Ukraine in 2014, after Russia annexed Crimea, after Russia meddled in eastern Ukraine, which even before the current war left about 14,000 people dead in Ukraine, you would think that people who care about their reputation wouldn't be associated with a state-sponsored channel for propaganda like Russia Today. But indeed, a few British politicians did. And I think that it should have stopped over the last 2 months, obviously, because it would have become unbearable for their reputation. But if the West, in broadly speaking, was more belligerent against Putin's regime, was confronting Putin's efforts at undermining Western order more strongly over the last 8 years, we might have avoided this brutal aggression, because the West sort of tepid response has emboldened him. But we are where we are now.
We are. And you have effectively a conviction in Russia of embezzling funds from your friend Navalny's mayoral campaign in 2013. You're now living here. I mean, has that had, apart from the huge effect that you can't live in your mother country, you've had to move halfway across the world, has it affected in this country your ability to get credit or any sort of employment thing or anything like that?
When I came in 2014 on a tourist visa, and a week into my staying in London, a criminal case was opened against me in Russia. Bizarrely, as you mentioned, the Russian authorities they don't pretend to put together a credible picture. So the allegation was that I stolen money from Navalny's electoral fund in the Moscow mayor elections in 2013, an allegation that Navalny denies. So nothing was stolen, and yet Russian authorities think that they know better and accuse me of that. So after some agonizing in 2014, I had no choice but to go the route of political asylum. So I applied for refugee status in the UK. It's not a preferred immigration option for anybody. You can't, there are many restrictions. You cannot travel outside of UK for years. And for people like me, that's probably the only possible way to get protection. And I'm grateful to the UK that this this protection has been granted. So I received asylum in 2015 and have been living in London since then. Now, in terms of restrictions, I have to mention that since the war started, a number of restrictions have been placed on Russians, where the criterion is Russian citizenship. So it's not involvement in corruption, war crimes, propaganda, but it's just if you have a Russian passport, you basically, it's very hard to operate a bank account in EU if you don't have a residency or citizenship. The cards of Russian banks, the Visa and MasterCard cards, they don't work outside of Russia. I've heard stories that it's very hard to get UK visa for Russians, be it a working visa or tourist visa. So I think these restrictions are counterproductive, and they push away the people who condemn this war, who are not friends to Putin's with Putin's regime. They push them in back to Russia, unfortunately, from the geography standpoint, from financial standpoint. So I think that these discriminatory measures are not really helping Ukraine and are not helping the Western cause.
And you've also spoken recently in the Times, a fantastic article about another legal problem, which is effectively Russia's, is influence the right word, but certainly powering UK courts.
Absolutely. The UK is a preferred place for litigation internationally. And certainly the Russian business people, they trust UK courts much more than they trust Russian courts. So in many commercial agreements, English courts are the place to resolve any disputes. And there are a number of such disputes which where billions of pounds are at stake in UK courts. Now, before the war, the English judges would be looking at evidence coming from Russia at face value, whereas anybody who understands how Russian legal system works understand that coercion is often used to extract evidence and testimonies from people in Russia. The disclosure standards that are obeyed by British, by UK solicitors and barristers cannot really apply to the Russian parties, especially Russian state-related organizations, central bank, other state-owned companies, etc. So in the legal profession, there is this concept that if you come to a court, there has to be equality of arms. The same legal principle have to apply to one party and to the other. And it became especially clear over the last 2 months that Russia is not at the same level of law as Western countries. So I think the UK has to recognize that and has to take measures to correct it.
Obviously, this latest war that Putin has started, it just again begins, the conversation about where does this end and what hope is there for Russia that they can rid themselves, not just of Putin, but of that culture of governance that one way or another, people in Russia at least might get to live under some form of democracy.
A complicated question. So I was quite confident that this war wouldn't happen because it's so against the interests of Russia. It's such a unnecessary, stupid move. But then again, Putin has been living in a reality of his own, and he made this bet that really already left dozens of thousands of people dead on the battlefields in Ukraine. At the beginning of the war, I thought there would be a ceasefire and end of active hostilities within a month or two, but now I'm not so confident that the end of the war will be as close. Even if there is an end to active hostilities, I think Putin's regime, if it's not changed in a major way, will see another aggression in 2 or 3 years. So the real answer to the issue of security in Europe and the world is to dismantle Putin's regime. And I think this war is a gross miscalculation for him, and it will speed up the demise of this system. So I think it's a matter of years, up to 5 years, until a serious political change happens in Russia. We are working towards that, but I don't have a good time frame or a scenario for you. It will take still a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, using Churchill's words, before that. But now that all the Western countries are, I think they realize that, and there's significant portion of Russians within Russia that are not happy with this war, I think we'll see a real change within a few years.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And what about Putin's popularity prior to the war? It's very... realize it's another big question. How do Russians... generally, prior to this war, feel about Vladimir Putin?
If you take the first 10 years of his rule, so the first 10 years of 21st century, Russia has seen unprecedented growth in both in GDP, in standards of living. But for the last 10 years, the incomes have been stagnating, political freedoms have been curtailed, and a lot of Russians have been leaving Russia. It's also quite difficult to gauge the real level of support in an autocratic country where people are afraid to speak about their true feelings and true opinions, even to pollsters. And especially this has been made difficult since the beginning of the war, where we've seen cases when people are going to, pickets or protest just with the posters that present a blank sheet of paper or some asterisks that replace the letters in no war slogan, and they still get detained and assessed penalties. So my sort of back of the envelope calculation is that there are 10 people who vehemently support Putin, who are beneficiaries of this regime. There are 20%, 10% of people who support him, 20% of people who oppose him under any circumstances, and there's 70% of people that are really victims of what they hear today from propaganda or from their friends, etc.
So it's actually quite a large proportion are, by sort of some form of default, quite pro-Putin.
I think in a system that really does not allow any competitor to raise up, that a independent political candidate cannot get on the ballots to be elected. They are not given any access to state media. in fact, state media throws a lot of mud at them. Yes, that's unfortunately the result of a quite skillful propaganda machine built by Kremlin.
So then any hope of Putin being replaced from within or some sort of mass uprising in Russia is probably quite unlikely.
I don't agree with that. I think especially since the start of the war, people have seen people in the, you know, political and business elite, they don't need this war. They have seen their fortunes decimated. They have their lifestyles have been turned upside down. They cannot enjoy, you know, vacations at Western resorts. Their kids cannot go to best private schools like before. So they are not happy. The average Russian has seen prices skyrocket. The brands that they become used to, like IKEA, McDonald's, Nestle, all leaving Russia. So they're also not happy about this. And now that they're seeing this constant stream of coffins coming from the Ukrainian front, this all is quite reminiscent of, you know, the Afghan war in the 80s that Soviet Union was fighting, which was quite widely unpopular. And this combination of dissatisfaction in the elites and in the general population will, I think, within a time frame of a few years, lead to a political change.
And that's obviously something that people around the world would be very relieved to see. A periodic concern is whether Vladimir Putin would go so far as to launch nuclear weapons. Do you think he would?
I haven't met Putin, but people who have and who have analyzed how he thinks and behaves, they describe him as quite a cowardly and calculating person. I think that use of nuclear weapons is quite unlikely because it would change so much for Russia and for Putin himself. It will be a suicidal move. So I don't think, even given the bad performance of Russian army on the Ukrainian battle front, I don't think he will ever step up and use the nuclear weapons on the battlefield.
Well, that will come as a huge relief to so many people. Do you think he's changed as a person, Putin? Is he different to the Putin that first led Russia?
You don't need me to change you that he changed. When Macron met with him, and Macron probably is the world or European leader that met Putin the most number of times over the last couple of years. He said in the beginning of this year that he met with a person who indeed has changed from the time that Macron met him maybe a few years ago. Some people attributed to COVID and the fact that he has been in very strict isolation for the last 2 years. The way it's portrayed is that he sits in some sort of bunker. Anybody who will have an audience with him has to be in quarantine for 2 weeks. He collects the stool samples from people that meet with him and go through different kind of tests. And you can see, even from the pictures of his meetings with world leaders, that they sit at the opposite sides of a very long table. It's really a bizarre sight. So I guess it's quite logical that this environment and this isolation changes how a person thinks and changes someone's mentality.
And is that just COVID? I mean, obviously, he invaded Ukraine first time around years before COVID. So, that, you know, that's we're reliving history to some extent. Obviously, that had its own characteristics, that invasion, compared to this one. The context was arguably slightly different. This has sort of got a feeling of a longer, protracted war about it. Is it COVID, or is it also just effectively a sort of lonely, paranoid man in power slowly going more mad?
Exactly. All the sort of feedback mechanisms between society and the people in charge in Russia have been usurped or eliminated. There is no representative political system, so there's no opposition in any part of Russian political structure. The political parties represented in Russian parliament are basically puppets of people orchestrating internal politics in Kremlin. There is no rule of law, and the whole law enforcement and court system is, governed in favor of the Russian authorities. And mass media has also been controlled from the center. So if you have system like that, and there is no change in who leads the country, naturally the person at the helm becomes out of touch with reality, and that's for sure what's happened with Putin.
So you never met Putin, but when was the last time you saw or spoke to Navalny?
We spoke with him shortly before he returned to Russia in January 2021. And after that, since he has been in prison, his family, our team, has a way of communicating with him through a lawyer that visits him on weekdays in his prison colony. And he's allowed about an hour of communication with his lawyer. So during that time, he scribbles his handwritten notes to us, to his family, and reads whatever material we pass to them. So there is a trickle of communications going on between us, but it's not, you can see his face or hear his voice, but he's still an integral part of our team.
And from what you gather, I mean, it seems like a very naive, almost daft question to ask, but is he okay? Like, what sort of conditions is he being kept in?
From what I hear, in Russian prison, the inmate population is separated into brigades of 20 to 30 people that live in one room in, you know, two-story bunks. And people in his brigade, they have been handpicked from other colonies. They are under strict instructions not to engage in conversation with him. So even though he is surrounded by people, it feels for him like he's in a solitary confinement. So that's another level of pressure in itself. Despite all the hardships of Russian prison, Navalny has been raising his voice against the war and against the tyranny of Putin since the beginning of the war. And he keeps current with the events through this information passed by his lawyer. And despite all that, he maintains good spirits, and he writes his short messages that are posted on his social media by his colleagues with his usual irony and self-humor.
Well, it's good to know that he hasn't lost that. Another prominent Russian here in the UK is Evgeny Lebedev, and there's been a wide conversation about his place in the House of Lords, and he has allies and detractors seemingly on all wings of British politics. What's your view of him, and do you think he's been unfairly embroiled in all this?
I wouldn't portray any Russian or any rich Russian that lives in London as the stooge of Putin. His father, Alexander Lebedev, whom I know personally, it's a fact that he has been a member of Russian security services in London, and then he switched to business and finance, and he made his fortune in Russia. Part of that fortune was used to establish him and his son Evgeny in British society, and through the media investments, the most famous of which is Evening Standard newspaper. I don't have any facts that connect Evgeny or his father to Russian corruption or to Putin's regime, although anything is possible. But I think I would be glad to give them the benefit of the doubt. Evgeny has been an established figure in London high society. Indeed, he has been given lordship a few years ago. It's difficult for me to judge that. I prefer to deal in facts, etc. I understand that this is a discretion of a prime minister. So that's that. That's something that really amazes and intrigues me about British public life.
Well, the same. Just as you mentioned our Prime Minister, how do you think he's handled Putin in general and his behaviour in Ukraine?
Before the war, Russia and Russian corruption wasn't really a central point in British public discourse. Unfortunately, for instance, after Skripal's assassination, Theresa May made a very belligerent and strong speech saying that they will root out dirty money from Russia, from the UK, and really nothing happened after that. And the same probably could be said about Boris's administration before the war. He has a lot of things on his plate. He had a COVID crisis to deal with, the Brexit and the Brexit aftermath. These are complicated issues. It's understandably Russia wasn't a big part of public discourse. Since the start of the war, Britain, led by Johnson, has been at the forefront of Western countries' support for Ukraine. I think Ukrainians hold him in high regard, and he is probably the most out of all world leaders, the most big supporter of Ukraine's efforts, and I think it also has helped him politically. We all know that he has been having a number of troubles on political front. His unwavering support for Ukraine, which is quite popular within the English, within the British electorate, I think has lifted his ratings.
Vladimir, this has been a real honor to interview you. Thank you for all the phenomenal work you do campaigning against corruption and obviously bravely speaking out against Vladimir Putin. Hope one day to meet you.
Thank you very much for having me, Matt.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go, Vladimir Ashikov. As with all the people on this in the history of the show, when you talk to people who are those who have the guts to stand up against oppression, against dangerous repressive regimes, I mean, I admire so many of the people that come on this show for a variety of reasons, but that takes particular bravery, particularly when you know that being in London probably makes you safer than being in Russia. But still, given, as Vladimir mentioned, that the fate of the Skripals and of Litvinenko, and again, others that we may not be aware of, it still takes exceptional bravery to do what he's done, to fundamentally change his life in so many ways, and all the restrictions that are still placed on him. But also, so many great things in there. One, obviously, the main thing is, how soon may Putin be deposed? It sounds that Vladimir is very optimistic of something happening within the next 5 years. But secondly, a very timely and correct reminder, not to presume that every Russian in London or in Britain is dodgy or some way connected to Vladimir Putin, when, of course, some of his most vociferous critics are in this country for all the reasons that Vladimir outlined. So what an incredible first-hand account of what it's like to go up against Putin's regime. That's all for today. Please do leave a review, subscribe, tell all your friends about it, spread the word, and I'll see you at one of the live shows soon. Ta-ra.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.